You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
It's Sunday, and it's not a good day if you're a Pacers fan, but it's a great day if you're a Heat fan. Welcome into a crossover Locked On Podcast Network edition of both Locked On Pacers and Locked On Heat with me, Tony East, the host of Locked On Pacers, and the host of Locked On Heat, David Ramil, on the other line. David, before we talk all the intricacies of this series and what the Pacers can do to possibly extend it to more games or what the Heat can do to get this thing over with tomorrow, how are you doing and how are you feeling about the playoffs so far?
Well, it's been pretty good, I'd have to say. I think I don't like cocky Heat fan. I'll be 100% honest with you. I think that's probably indicative of every fan base that has, they get a couple wins under their belt, and next thing you know, they start talking a lot of smack. But the playoffs have been pretty encouraging. It just feels like this weekly tradition. We've done this now for a third consecutive week of talking on Sundays. We did it 2 weeks ago before the Heat and Pacers matched up twice to end the seeding games, and we previewed the playoffs, and now again. And it just seems like every time we talk, something new has come up and it changes so drastically. Like, we were talking about this just a week ago, a series that could potentially go six games even without Domantas Sabonis, and now it's clearly not probably not going six games. Other than that, you know, everything's been going well. The Heat look pretty sharp in ways that, unfortunately, the Pacers do not.
I think like tracking the three Sunday shows we did would be a funny exercise in the trajectory of these teams, because the first Sunday we did, the Pacers just had beat the Lakers and the Heat were struggling. And we were like, okay, these two seeding games will decide the four seed. You know, this could be fun. And then we previewed the playoffs and we both picked the Heat. But, you know, the Heat have a little bit more momentum. They won the game that mattered in the regular season. And now we're here, and the Pacers season could be over in 48 hours while the Heat could be the first team in the East to advance. So it's really been quite the slide for the Pacers and quite the growth for the Heat. And I don't really know where to start, because I feel like from a Pacers perspective, I want to ask a very obvious Heat thing. But I mean, like, at every turn of this series, the Heat have just outclassed the Pacers in some way, right? Like, every Pacers run is met with some Heat response that ends it, or every good thing the Pacers have going, they just can't sustain. So it just feels like the Heat have had their number every way. But the biggest thing to me is the Heat are just getting whatever they want from three-point range, and it's just killing the Pacers.
Yeah, that's probably been, you know, the Heat obviously led in three-point percentage over the course of the regular season before the hiatus. And so maybe you don't typically equate Miami teams with shooting that well, but they do have a number of players that have been able to shoot well. Duncan Robinson, of course, leads the way, but Tyler Hero as a rookie has been pretty good. Jay Crowder, ever since he's joined Miami, has been very good in that regard. And then to have Jimmy Butler shoot as surprisingly well. Yeah.
What were the odds you'd get before the series that Jimmy Butler would shoot substantially better from three than Doug McDermott?
not particularly good ones. I mean, it's a lot of it has broken Miami's way. I'm curious. I know we'll probably talk a little bit about this later on, but the free throw disparity has to be a huge concern amongst Pacers fans. But the thing to me that also just stands out more than anything else is I really do think the Pacers have played very well. I've been, if not necessarily critical, I've been pretty aware of the fact that Miami has not played a perfect game, and far from it. They just have the talent disparity because of the injuries to Lamb and Sabonis in particular seems so obvious, and that creates such a talent disparity that it's Miami can afford to make mistakes in a way Indiana can't. Indiana has to play absolutely perfect. And I think we saw as close to that as possible for, I guess, 23 minutes of the second half on Saturday. And then, of course, things kind of fell apart towards the end there.
Yeah, that second half was like what we've been talking about all series is. In both game one and game two, I would say for 40 to 44 minutes of both games one and two, the Pacers played pretty well and pretty, not even necessarily, but, you know, within like 3 to 5 points of the Heat the whole time for those stretches. And there's always just, you know, right at the end of game one or right at the beginning of the third of game two where the Heat just punch them right in the mouth and put the game, you know, like, look how much better we are. You guys can't be slacking like this for this long, and just put the game away. And then game three was weird as all hell, where it kind of felt like halftime, the Heat kind of slouched their shoulders and the Pacers really came back until, you know, the very end. But yeah, they've had a lot of, you know, pretty solid play. They figured out in game three that, if you know, that little pitch handoff thing they were doing to keep the Heat moving could really get them better matchups if they wanted to. But then they turn around and, you know, Goran Dragic can't miss a three, and Heroes looks awesome off the bench. And of course, Duncan Robinson's been amazing. Bam and Jimmy are playing to the level you'd expect them to in a postseason. It's like, I think that's well said from you. It's like, if they have three possessions, like they had it within eight in the third quarter of game three for, it felt like 4 minutes, where they actually were doing well on D, and they couldn't get the ball in the basket to really push the momentum over the top into their favor. And that just killed them. They can't have that level of sustained failure if they want to keep up with the Heat, and they just haven't been able to do it.
Yeah, it has been pretty, I think, stark, the contrast there. And I mean, look, Brogdon played so well for most of the game. And, you know, I think I had talked about that being a huge X factor. I think you brought that up as well prior to the series, that he was going to be – well, he had to shoulder such a big part of the scoring load. And he's done a very good job, and on game three particularly well. I think we've gotten a lot of surprise performances from Miami. I mean, Duncan struggled in game one, and then, of course, in game two, he was just historically good. 7 of 8 from three-point range is not a performance that we had expected from
– and even half of them were, like, shooter. Heavily contested, and he just drilled –
Yeah, that must be hella frustrating. I can't imagine that people watching this from the Pacers side of things are like, oh, he just curls around his screen or gets that dribble hand up, or he has that one dribble shot, and next thing you know, he's even if it's contested, he's able to knock it down, and he's got such a quick release. It's unbelievable. I think even Heat fans are in total awe of him at times, because he has just been such a phenomenal discovery this season. Like, nobody had ever projected that he would be the kind of player that he's become. And to do this in the playoffs is really pretty inspirational. It's been a hell of a run for him. But Goran Dragic playing as well as he has, I think that's...
All-star level.
Yeah, without a doubt. I mean, averaging almost 22 points per game. It's just almost 23, to be honest with you. And he's just knocking down those shots at key moments there. Whenever Indiana seems to mount a comeback, Goran's always there to knock in that lefty three-pointer. Again, even some of those shots have been contested too. And he gets to the line. He's able to create fouls there. Jimmy obviously is able to get a lot of that. Is that part of what's missing from Indiana's perspective, is that they don't have a key scorer right now who can slow the game down or get to the line in order to initiate contact and again, make some instant offense by getting to the free throw line?
Yeah, they've been horrible at getting to the line all series and really all season. I wrote back in December, so the numbers are updated since then. And now that Basketball Reference has altered their like historic research stuff, I can't get you exact numbers. But there was a time this season where their free throw attempts per, I think, 100 possessions was like one of the worst five numbers of the decade.
Wow.
Yeah, and that was pre-Depot. So, right, like they're better now at getting to the line than they were then. But they are not a good team at getting to the free throw line. They play through the post. They take the mid-range jumpers, right? You saw at the end of game two, actually, when, you know, they kind of got it close and it felt like they took seven long-range twos in a row, right? They really are okay with some of the non-analytics-friendly shots. And they have guys who can make them, right? They're not, like, terrible shots for the Pacers, per se, but they're really bad at, you know, getting to the line. They're one of the worst teams we've seen in a while at it. And in the playoffs, it's really magnified, especially – when contrasted with Butler, right, who's one of the best high usage players like ever at getting to the line this season. I think his free throw rate is insane. And during game three, I think his free throw rate was actually over one. Like, he had more free throws than shot attempts. Which is crazy. But like, outside of maybe one or two, you know, that you go, oh, you know, that could have gone both ways. It's like he earns them. He's just really good at it. So they be between both the Heat having guys who can get to the rim, draw those fouls, and the Pacers not having the guy you described who can slow the game down and do that. Brogdon's doing, you know, as much as he can in that regard, but he can't do it at the level that he can, as well as the, you know, the shot profile they have. They're just getting, between that and the threes, they're just getting dogged in the efficiency battle.
I'm a little surprised to say that you think Butler earned a lot of those trips to the line. I mean, 17 of 20, he's hitting them at a historically good rate for his career. But, I mean, 20 free throw attempts seems like a pretty glaring.
So I said this on our show yesterday. It's like during the, maybe I'm just like not critical of refs enough, but like during the game, I never feel like calls are bad. Like rarely, at least, except for Olynyk, whatever the hell that was. I never finish a game and go, like, I didn't ask, like, I don't look at box scores during the game. So I didn't, after the game, if you'd asked me the free throw disparity, this is what I said yesterday was, I would have said like 40 to 30. You know, I did not realize it was 52-28 that they just took, I think it's 28. I might be wrong about that. But anyway, a lot more. I didn't realize it was that much. So maybe that's just part of watching the game that I miss is the disparity, because I didn't feel like any of the calls were like extremely wrong, except for one I remember on Jakar Sampson. I didn't feel like any call was like, what, you know, what is that? I just think the Heat have been better at targeting that specific facet of the Pacers' defense.
Yeah, I mean, Brogdon got 8 free throw attempts. I would not have guessed that it was that many as part of his 34 points. So at least he was getting to the line at a pretty good clip, just nothing as heavily as you know, 20 attempts for Jimmy Butler. I can imagine it must be a source of incredible frustration for Pacers fans. And it certainly was for Nate McMillan. I mean, he was pretty critical.
I've never heard him talk like that before, ever.
Yeah, as a former player, generally they don't – well, I mean, I don't know. Sometimes it's players do talk about it that way. So maybe it's not that surprising. But for Nate, I know he's not typically one to criticize refs in that way. So he must be getting pretty frustrated. And maybe that's a result of the fact that this was Indiana's best showing and the season was on the line. Something I kept reiterating to my, you know, listeners and fan base over Twitter was, look, it came down to that second half for Indiana. They got blown out in the first half and they had to mount as huge a comeback as they did just to keep it interesting. And there was so much on the line for them because down 3-0, let's face it, there's not a good chance of them being able to mount a kind of comeback in the series and make it interesting. I know we'll probably talk about that a little bit more later on, but I just don't see any opportunity for Indiana to even up the series or even steal a game. At this point, I would imagine that a sweep is more likely to happen than our original 6-game prediction.
I would say substantially more likely, yes.
Well, one of the things I did want to talk to you about was the kind of support that CBDMD offers, because I don't know about you, but for me, I spend most of my day running around my toddler son, and then sometimes I have to sit down, not just to record or write, but just to do work in general. And I could certainly use the support, whether you're a professional athlete or a stay-at-home parent, or if you spend 8 hours a day in an uncomfortable office chair, you need that kind of support. And CBDMD has an amazing duo that can help you relax, regroup, and recharge when life gets chaotic. CBD Freeze with Menthol is an award-winning product that offers instant cooling relief for muscles and joints in a convenient and easy-to-use roller or a shareable squeeze tube. CBD Recover combines CBD with anti-inflammatory compounds like Arnica and vitamin B6 to give you the support you need where it matters most. And to make it even easier to try this amazing duo of topicals and everything else that CBDMD has to offer, they're offering all of our listeners 25% off. That's amazing. 25% off your next order when you use the promo code NBA at checkout. Once again, that's CBDMD.com. Use the promo code NBA for 25% off your purchase of superior CBD oil products from CBDMD. We're back talking a little bit about the 3-0 advantage Miami has over the Indiana Pacers. And I think from the Heat fan perspective, it's been pretty glaring to see Victor Oladipo at less than 100%. And I know that must be a sore spot for you, but I kind of want to get your Pacers-centric take on Oladipo's performance, because it seems like he's trying as hardest, but he's making an effort at least to overcome whatever injuries he's battling. And at the same time, he is getting roasted both defensively and offensively. He's not been very efficient, and that must be a pretty big source of frustration, because I mean, he's you're counting on him to keep the series close, and he has not been particularly good.
Even beyond like the efficiency, and he's had some troubles chasing Duncan Robinson, which I thought would be a good role for him, and it is not. I was wrong. But the turnovers are just killer, and I think Heat people have to notice this. And I think Spoelstra's done a good job of saying, hey, Depot right now kind of has tunnel vision. Like, let's just clamp all over him the second he drives and he spins into these triple teams or turns. Turnovers have been so killer for him when he can't make up for his lack of, like, his threes have been going in, and he's had some nice drives to get into the line in game 2 especially. Like, he's done some good stuff to make up for his lackluster defense, but then he just coughs it up 6 times in game 2, 3 times in game 3. It's like he just looks so inefficient out there, and combine that with the defensive struggles that he just hasn't been good enough. Like the point totals being over 20 is good, but it takes him so many possessions to get there. And then, you know, late in game three, they finally get it to a one possession game. They're down three, and then he rips the contested three with 10 on the shot clock. Like the most great for him. I get that he's the leader of the team, but that like hero ball shot in a key moment just felt weird. And you know, he's been like fine, I guess, but for the guy that he's been in the past and the guy they needed him to be this series, he just has not been good enough or even really good compared to the player they need him to be. So
I've got a bone to pick with the hero ball thing because
– oh, okay. Well, people have a bone to pick with that too. So go ahead.
My feeling is that if he knocks it down, it doesn't feel like a bad shot, right? I mean
– well, of course. And what Jared Wade, I don't know if you know who he is. He said when we were talking about it in our Pacers group chat, it's like he's your highest paid player. Like you pay him to take and make those kind of shots. It's like that's fine. I think for me it was more just the timing of the shot clock. Like maybe wait a few seconds, see if something else develops before you take that. I mean, it's the depot. Like I guess it's fine if it's him. It's just 10 on the shot clock. You finally got it to one possession. And then it was never one possession the rest of the game. So I don't know. It just sat wrong with me. But
no, I mean,
many
I
people will push that. Back. I understand.
No, I understand why it's important to try to get him going. But also, it seems like he's trying to do too much at a point in time when maybe instead of going for the home run, you try and go for the singles. You know?
Yeah.
It's curious. I know a lot of Heat fans are already saying he's checked out. Do you get that kind of sense?
No.
Also, no, I don't.
I don't know. You saw him dive on the floor in the fourth quarter, right? And clearly super frustrated on the bench after he slapped Chad Buchanan's hand, the GM of the team, and then walked behind the curtain before coming back to the bench. You know, clearly frustrated the way he was talking after the game, game three, at least in his media session. You know, he's clearly frustrated. The whole team was after that game. He's clearly got his heart in it. He just isn't 100%. And he's admitted that. He tried is the wrong word. I might get clipped for that. He said he wasn't going to play because his body's not 100%. And then, you know, factors change and he's playing. But, like, we know this isn't 100% Vic. I think the frustrating part for him is he knows he can be better, but his body just kind of won't let him.
What are you seeing from T.J. Warren that hasn't worked? I mean, probably his best game of the series with 23 points on Saturday. Not particularly efficient, but 8 of 18 from the field, 0 for 3 from three-point range, which was a little surprising, 7 of 7 from the line. So a solid game from him. Was it too much to expect that, you know, Bubble Jordan would show up? Okay. I mean, a lot of that, I think you could give credit to Miami's defense, but it also seems like he hasn't been finding the ball in those spots that are most convenient for him. And he was able to make some, I think he was able to create his shot on a couple occasions along the baseline where he had that turnaround work. He got it up against Goron. I think he got it against, I want to say Jimmy too at some point, or maybe it was Crowder, but either way, it seems like he's getting to his spots on Saturday, at least more than he has throughout the rest of the series. But I know there have been times there where it just doesn't look like they're getting him to the ball. They're getting him the ball in a position where he can be effective in scoring. And I know he had that costly turnover where he spun directly into Goran Dragic when Dragic provided some surprisingly great defense late in the fourth quarter.
They were targeting Dragic on that play, and then he ended up getting the steal.
Yeah, I mean, I can't say enough about Goran. Like, there's some talk now that I do want to write about because it's such an interesting topic to me where Goran ranks as far as the franchise greatest point guards. But he is the team's greatest point guard without a doubt. Like Mario Chalmers or Chief, yeah. I mean, who else ranks there? Tim Hardaway? I mean, that's the only other person. No, seriously, that's his biggest competition.
I've never thought about that.
Yeah, but he
was an all-star. Is he the only all-star point guard they've ever had?
I mean, Hardaway back in the 90s. It just seems like such a long era ago. And Hardaway's name is associated with that Miami's first forays into the playoffs and most consistent trips to the playoffs with the whole Heat versus Knicks battles that define the franchise and Pat Riley and Alonzo Mourning and all that stuff. But I mean, the reality is that Goran, the team hasn't achieved a lot, but he's been a very consistently great player for the last 5 years. And he was acquired in 2015 to join Dwayne Wade and Chris Bosh to form an all-star trio that was going to help guide this team into the championship contention. And of course, Chris developed, you know, the blood clots, and Dwayne, you know, was falling apart, and he left in 2016 anyway. And so it just never has worked out for Goran Dragic to be the player that he was meant to be. He wasn't ever supposed to be the team's leader as far as production is concerned. And his role has changed so dramatically over the last five seasons, but he's been consistently very good. And now that he has Jimmy there to be the quote unquote alpha on this team, he just is a very good complementary player that knocks down big shots and always gets it done. And that defense, I think, was perfectly representative of his ability to do whatever it takes in order to help this team win.
Yeah, he's been incredibly good in this series. And I was actually recently thinking, like, they were trying to pawn him off for nothing last summer to the Mavs. And all of a sudden, he's like this crucial playoff player for the team.
Well, they've shot that down. I don't know. And the most recent Adrian Wojnarowski podcast, Goran said that he talked to his agent, Bill Duffy, and that apparently was never really true, that we only heard reports of that. But I don't know. I mean, maybe it was, maybe it wasn't. Either way, thank you, Mark Cuban, for not accepting the deal.
So for me, the biggest Dragic, well, not the biggest, but a big factor of him being good that also hurt my prediction brain is a lot of times during the regular season or even leading up into the bubble, when I was thinking about what a Pacers Heat series might look like, I would think in my head, okay, Brogdon will be going against Kendrick Nunn, right? And Nunn can score at a high level. He's going to get third rookie of the year. He's even played in these games, but it's like, wow, Brogdon can beat him easily. His defense is weak. He's a rookie. You know, what will he be up to in the playoffs? And then instead, not only is he not going against a rookie and none, he's going against a proven good veteran in Dragic. But Dragic also plays very well, and none doesn't play at all. Like, that shifts the calculus of what you look for in that matchup quite a bit in a way that I did not anticipate, nor did I think correctly about, because Dragic has been insanely good.
Yeah, I think I did tell you that Nunn was likely not to play during the playoffs.
You did. You were correct on that. And that surprised me a lot. And you were right. And it has worked very well.
Yeah, I mean, I think some people in the Heat fandom have been a little critical of Goran starting because...
How can you be?
Because, you know, he's started off a little sluggishly in games one and two. It was a little slow, and then he just winds up turning it up so incredibly in the second half. And then Miami, you know, Miami had played badly in the first half of games one and two, just can't kind of keep it even with Indiana. And then, of course, they just were able to explode offensively in the second half for the most part. In game three, it was the inverse, where they had a huge, historically good first half, and then Indiana's defense tightened up considerably in the second half of game three. But, Goran, I think a lot of people are concerned about his defense and his on-ball approach, and we saw that with Brogdon to some extent. So it makes some sense, but I mean, I think he's just doing so much offensively that you kind of take whatever issues he might have defensively just to get that kind of scoring, right? Because it's been so crucial to Miami's offense looking good.
I'm pretty amazed we've made it this far without talking about Bam, like, at all, because I have a very loaded question for you about Bam. Has he been the Heat's best player in this series?
Ooh, it's probably something we should address in the next segment. I think we will talk about it in the next segment, because I know that you probably want to bring up something about Built Bar.
I do want to bring up something about Built Bar, described as the best tasting protein bar ever. And I can vouch for that because I've tried them and they are delicious. They are these chocolate based protein bars that are great for the health conscious guy. They have 12 original flavors plus 6 new ones that I haven't tried but all sound amazing. Caramel brownie, cookies and cream, lemon almond cheesecake, carrot cake, apple almond crisp, plus more. They're soft and easy to chew, but the consistency of them sort of matches what the flavor would be if you were eating the thing you were eating, right? The mint brownie one is a little bit softer. The coconut one's a little crunchier. They're delicious. They're great for losing or maintaining weight while you can indulge in a nice, delicious treat. So they have a nice new promo code for their relaunch that could get you a free cooler with purchase while supplies last. What you need to do is go to builtbar.com and use the promo code LOCKEDON. You'll get $10 off your order of them, and you could get a free cooler with your purchase while supplies last. So go to builtbar.com, use the promo code LOCKEDON, all one word, at checkout for $10 off at builtbar.com. So I have to know if you think Bam has been the Heat's best player, because I think he has been the Heat's best player.
That is very tough to quantify for me. I think he did have moments.
That's why it's loaded, right? I'm putting the idea in your head by asking the question that way.
it wouldn't take much to get me there, but because I can see exactly what you're saying. He is the focal point on offense. He does initiate so much of it from the elbow. His passing has been so phenomenal. And so when you take him out of the game or he gets into early foul trouble the way he did in game two, you can tell right away that things aren't working as smoothly as they should, because that passing – is gone. The dribble handoff that works so well, not just with Tyler Hero, but with Duncan Robinson in particular, is a missing element there. And while Kelly Olynyk is solid enough at creating those kinds of opportunities, he's not nearly as proficient a player as Bam. And Bam in pick and roll situations is just unstoppable. I mean, if there's one glaring weakness for him, is that he's not very good as far as his post-up game is concerned. And we were lucky to see him actually have a couple of opportunities going up against Malcolm Brogdon on a switch there, where he was able to kind of comport himself, take a decent hook shot and finish in the lane. There's something we had not seen from him consistently, because he does throw that shoulder a little bit and then either draw the offensive foul or turn the ball over or put up a bad shot. But he looked much more polished. And he's still so young. I mean, it's unbelievable to think that he's already this good. I mean, I imagine you're probably going through something similar with Sabonis, but Bam is so good, so athletic, and it just seems like it's only going to get better and better for him. I mean, as long as he develops a consistent jump shot, he could be a really consistent all-star for many, many, many years to come. But as far as your question is concerned, he is a crucial part of it. I'd still give that point to Jimmy as the team's best player, just because he does so much defensively.
Yeah.
But Bam, I mean, it's hard to take away what Bam does, because it's not just the defense that makes everything so eminently switchable. It's like you see him, you know, abandon his matchup and then kind of go on to Malcolm Brogdon in pick and roll situations. And you can do that, you know, because he's so fluid. He's so good at guarding ball handlers that it's not a concern to see him there. You can't go at Adebayo and think that you're getting a mismatch, because none exists. Like,
no.
He can guard 1 through 5 so effectively. And on offense, his passing is such a crucial component. But I think Jimmy is still so much better, especially at slowing the pace down, getting to the line if his shot's not falling, and creating those opportunities for himself to really distance the team away from any kind of – or as a lead is getting cut into or anything like that. That he's still probably – it's close. It's 1A to maybe a slightly distant 1B. But I'd still give Jimmy the nod and then Bam a close second.
Nice. Okay. That's interesting. So Bam's defense has been insane to me. And obviously, like – Jimmy's put TJ Warren in jail the whole series. I think Warren is 4 for 14 with Jimmy on him. Like, he can't do anything. And
it's incredible.
Yeah, it's insanely good. And you're right, Jimmy has controlled everything on offense. I keep having to tell people on Pacers Twitter that they're like, oh, Jimmy didn't play that good. I'm like, did you watch the game? What are you talking
about? Well, because you just see the shooting numbers, and maybe you might be able to make that argument. But I mean, if that was the only indicator of his success, just like Bam.
Yeah.
Like Bam could have a 13-point game, and you're like, well, why is he an all-star? It's like, well, because he does everything else so damn well.
Right. Yeah, and like I forget which game it was. I think it was game 2. They were like plus 21 or 23 with Bam on the floor. And,
right.
You know, like they lose the minutes when he's not in there. That actually was killer in game 2, is that a lot of the stretch in the first half – or game 3, excuse me. A lot of the stretch in the first half where the Heat went on the historic run, Bam wasn't in the game. It's like, if you lose those minutes, you just lose the game. It's that simple. I think you might be right about Butler. I've just been so, so impressed with Bam. I knew he was good. I've seen him do well against the Pacers, an all-star, but just this level of – you know, occasionally even being the point guard, he can guard every player on the floor. Like, all 5 guys, if you put Bam on him, things are going to go well for the Heat. I mean, he's been so good, it's insane. And I have nothing but amazing things to say about Bam after this series.
So I got a question on Saturday after the game asking me what kind of adjustments I thought the Pacers should make. And clearly that's a question that you'd be best to answer. I'm sure you probably address it on your own show.
Yeah.
But as we're talking now, I wonder, is there anything that Indiana can do to win game 4 and to potentially take the series back?
Look, from game to game, I've actually – like, if you told me before game 2 what their adjustments would have been, right, what they did is they left Crowder a bit more open away from the place to let him get more shots. They changed their substitution pattern to get the full bench lineup in earlier so they could have more energy for their starters for longer, both in the second and fourth quarters. And they had a third one that I can't remember.
They
took 10 more threes. They took 10 more threes from game 2 to game 1. If you told me those – 3 what I thought were pretty big changes in strategy after game 1, I would have said, great, those sound awesome. And then the full bench unit sucked and Crowder played really well and they lost. It didn't matter. And then going into game 3, right, they found that pitch offense thing I was talking about to try to target weaker Heat defenders, right? They changed the rotation up again to get some of their lesser players fewer minutes. 2 good changes again. Still didn't work. And they changed the starting lineup too, right? Justin Holiday came in there. I liked that idea, but it didn't really help that much in the first half because they still had Depot chasing Duncan Robinson around. So they just had fewer fouls from Aaron Holiday, basically, in the starting five. I like that lineup better. I think they should stick with it. It was good in the third. But anyway, every adjustment the Pacers have made along the way, if you told me before the game that they were going to do that, I would have said, great, that sounds like an awesome adjustment. And then it just isn't enough because the Heat have the talent and Spoelstra has the counters for these adjustments. So going forward, I'm not really sure what they can do a lot of. I think the first thing I want to do is get Edmund Sumner on the floor for more minutes. He played 27 minutes in game one and played very well and actually made Duncan Robinson miss some shots, which no one else has been able to do. But 27 minutes in game one, and he's only played 30 minutes in the whole series. So quick math, he's played three total minutes since then, did not play in game three. And they, you know, they're trotting McDermott out there. The second McDermott hits the floor, the Heat just put him in a pick and roll every possession. They put a ball screen on him, and he can't do anything about it. And if he's missed, I think he's missed every three he's taken the series, right? If he can't make threes, why is he in the game? I think, you know, maybe cut his minutes a little bit. If he's making his threes, let him play. But I think you play Sumner over him a little bit because at least Edmund Sumner provides some defense, and he can't provide less value than McDermott has on offense so far. Outside of that, though, I think you just – it's lazy to say this because people dunk on McMillan for this being something he says in media. And he's not going to say adjustments, obviously, but he always says, we got to execute better. And people are like, what the hell does that mean? You know, I'm a fan of the team. I want to know what the team's going to do on the floor to be better. But sometimes it is like that, right? In the like I just said – they were down eight in the second half of game three for 4 minutes where they could have, you know, stepped on the Heat's throat and made that a tie game if they had just gotten this or that shot to fall or whatever. Like, if they were just a little bit better in that time, they might have won that game. So I think you get Sumner a few more minutes, but they're running out of adjustments, right? Spoelstra's had the counters, and, you know, they can only do so much to really give themselves a better chance. They're just less talented.
You know, the Pacers are so shorthanded, and one of Miami's biggest, most underrated strengths is their depth. And so I think that helps Spoelstra where he has that kind of versatility and depth on his bench where he can just bring in an Iguodala or a Kelly Olynyk or Derek Jones Jr., even just to provide some defense. I mean, Tyler Hero, again, as a rookie, you're not expecting him at 20 years old to come and have the kind of impact he did in game three.
I actually want to address that really quickly is we talked about that on our show yesterday. One of the Pacers' biggest strengths with Sabonis, but also just in general during the regular season, was their second unit. And it's been awful in this series. And on the flip side, the Heat, you know, this is what the Pacers really need. Hero can come in and score 20 points off the bench every game. He's been really good on offense this series. The Pacers don't have that. When they go to their bench, their offense really struggles. And McConnell, we talked about the Heat killer, he's been pretty terrible this series. So they just haven't had any bench ball handling or shooting to keep up with the Heat second unit. That is not something I expected before the series. I thought the Pacers bench would be better. So yeah, the Heat's depth has been on not only full display, but a huge swing in this series.
I kind of want to ask you this because I know it feels like I'm rubbing salt in the wound, but I don't know that we'll have the opportunity to talk again as the series progresses the way it has so far. It could wind up being a sweep or five games. I mean, we'll see. But we might wind up talking again later on. But just from your perspective on the outside while I have you here on the call, do you see the Heat being a good team, or is Indiana losing the series just by virtue of being underhand or shorthanded and not having the kind of key players that they're missing? Or is Miami good enough to, in your opinion, to be a legitimate contender moving forward?
Can I say both? Is that allowed?
Yeah, absolutely.
Because some of that, the reason I say both is matchups, right? I've been looking at the Heat all year as what I thought was the best Pacers for a preferred playoff opponent.
Caitlin Cooper was the opposite of that. She was pretty consistent saying that Miami was a dangerous matchup for...
Actually, every single person in the Pacers conglomerate was the opposite of me. So maybe don't use me as the barometer there. That was mostly just me. But I thought Sabonis would be really crucial in this series. Again, I talked about Kendrick Nunn earlier. I like that matchup. Didn't expect Dragic to be an all-star or Hero to be the best bench player in the series. But I liked the matchup a lot. And it turns out the Heat have the two best players in the series, without Sabonis especially. But I think the Heat are really talented and can – you know, they're definitely one of the best four teams in the East. I don't know if they're better than any of those three teams, though, which makes it hard. But I think that I underrated how hard the Heat would be for the Pacers. And I think everybody else is proving that I'm wrong and that they're a tough matchup. But also, they're really good. So I think it's a little bit of both. But I don't quite have the Heat in that top three echelon yet. But they could prove me wrong. I mean, no one has looked – literally no one in the NBA has looked like the best team in the league during the playoffs so far. So – he'd have an opportunity, I think.
Yeah, I mean, that's fair. I mean, Milwaukee's showing some warts there. The Lakers, obviously, the Clippers. No team has been absolutely perfect. And while the Raptors are dismantling a bad Brooklyn team, or maybe Boston is beating a Philly team that seems like it's eating itself from the inside. I mean, I don't know. I think Miami's looked pretty good overall, but they've still been playing. I hate to say this because it sounds like I'm being insulting, but I think they're playing down to their opponent a little bit. And this is... Oof. I mean, I think it's on.
That Pacers is all for today's show. No, I'm kidding.
The Pacers would have been a much tougher matchup if they were at full strength. And I feel like Miami has not played very well for large stretches of all three games. They've had really incendiary quarters or performances from key players. But overall, I think they still have another level to hit. And we have not seen that for a full 48. And maybe that's hard to do in the playoffs consistently. But this has not been the best version of this team for prolonged periods of time.
Even full strength versus full strength in the series, I would have picked the Heat. I think they're better. They were better in the regular season for a reason. Yeah, I mean, we were both the same level of confident in the Pacers roster to win two games in the series. We both picked Heat in six. So
even
both of us were wrong about both the matchups and how talented the Pacers could be in this series. But I prepped you for this question. Can I do it now?
Absolutely.
Okay, so the flip of the series now is the Pacers All-Star Sabonis is out. Say Sabonis is playing and Bam is not, what would you have the series at right now? I want to see if we have the same answer.
Oh, if Sabonis is healthy and Bam is out, I would probably say 1-2.
Who's got the one there?
Oh, Miami, I think. Okay. I think Miami would be down 2-1.
Not the number I had. I would have the Heat up 2-1 still, I think.
Okay.
If they were shooting this well, I think they'd be up. But that's close. You know, they've been close enough for a lot of minutes that I think Sabonis could have gotten them a win, but I'm not sure he could have gotten them more than one win with, like you said, the Heat not playing perfect and still being able to kind of cruise. I don't know if they could have gotten it.
Without Bam there, and Sabonis is a great player, I mean, most of his impact is offensive, right? I mean, yes. Defensively, he still has some growth there. With Bam, it's both. I mean, it's not his scoring, but his passing makes so much of a difference, and his ability to set screens for Duncan, you know, of Duncan's 7 made 3-pointers in game 2. I mean, so many of them came as a result of Bam screens and dribble handoffs and things of that sort. So it just makes a much easier, more fluid hub of the offense when he's out there. And defensively, as you pointed out, he's been so good and so versatile. He makes things so much easier. If you trot Kelly Olynyk out there, nobody can replicate what Bam can do. And so if he's out there, maybe you give another game to have Duncan having some incredible shooting, or maybe Jimmy Butler steps up the way he did in game 1. I don't know. But I just, without him in that lineup, I think this is a very bad Heat team. Or not, maybe not bad, but not definitely not as good. And so you have to give a lot of credit to Indiana. I mean, I asked Spoelstra about that after game 2. You know, what was the difference as far as those first half starts and everything else like that? And one of the points that he made was that, you know, Indiana's been a very good team. You have to give credit to Indiana for their ability to play defense at a high level, something they've done throughout the whole regular season. So it's not like
they have a 115 defensive rating in this series, that high level defense, right? I'm writing about that. It has not been high level, and that is part of the problem.
Yeah, no doubt. So what's your expectation for game 4? I think there's nothing else to really rehash there. There are no adjustments left to be made, but if you had to make a prediction, what would it be?
This is a weird scenario because, like, in normal NBA times, I feel like sometimes game 4 is like a pity win kind of thing. The Heat are technically the 5 seed, but there's often times like they win the game 4 so they can win in front of their home crowd, like no real effort kind of stuff. But like, how much are the Pacers going to want this? You know, I've been watching Justin Holiday's vlogs in the bubble, and he had Jeru, his brother, featured very heavily in his most recent episode. And Jeru, even before obviously he wanted to make the playoffs, but before their last regular season game, Jeru was featured heavily in the episode. He was very excited about leaving the bubble and seeing his family. How much, if you're the Pacers, obviously, there's a pride element. Joel Embiid was talking about that. You don't want to get swept. You want to prove how good you are. They're not going to roll over, but, like, I mean, you can leave the bubble, like, by Tuesday. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, how much of that hangs over your head when you're playing and stuff like that? So I don't know what version of the Pacers we're going to get. I'm not excusing them for that. If they have that attitude, they deserve to lose and get ridiculed for it. But And that's certainly possible. But the same thing is, I don't know what the Heat are going to think. You know, are they going to go? I'm assuming they'll go all out, try to get the sweep. But you never really know. These game fours in a 3-0 situation are sometimes strange. I don't really know what we're going to get from both teams. But I mean, I have no reason to pick the Pacers. It's 3-0. So I will pick the Heat to win and sweep this one.
Yeah, same here. I think Miami recognizes how imperative it is to kind of close this out as quickly as they can, so to start preparing more than likely for Milwaukee in the next matchup. And
oh, come on.
Yeah, you know,
you can say certainly. It's okay.
Yeah, okay. So, you know, to start prepping for them. And then from Indiana's perspective, like you brought it up earlier, Miami has been able to counter everything, to match any kind of effort, and to deliver a punch to knock Indiana from their comfort zone. And so given the fact that they can leave here and you have to make such a huge climb to just even up the series or to make it interesting again, like I can't see why Indiana would put forth that kind of monumental effort when it's clear that Miami might be able to meet any kind of response and overmatch them in some way. So if we start to see it get close and then Miami starts pulling away, I could just as easily see Indiana just say, you know what, to hell with it. Why am I even bothering to give that kind of effort? And I know that's, you know, that's tough to say from a professional's perspective, but
I know
everything's been so weird.
I understand.
Everything's so weird about this bubble, and to leave there, I mean, I don't think having Domantas Sabonis there to cheer you on from the sidelines.
He'll still be in quarantine.
Yeah, I don't even know why he's going. Game. Yeah, I don't even know why he's there. It's like, did he want the free trip to Orlando?
that makes me wonder if maybe, like I know they kicked out the teams that got eliminated in the regular season, but I wonder if the teams that get eliminated in the playoffs are allowed to stay through the whole round so they can, like, have him see the team or something. I don't know why else he would go. Like, especially if they know he's not playing. I don't know. It's very strange.
Yeah, I mean, maybe you're optimistic and you want to kind of tell your team, oh, you know, look, we're bringing him back because we know we're going to still be in it in 3 days.
Light a fire under Miles Turner's butt, even though he's actually played pretty well.
Yeah. Oh, well. I mean, anything else you want to rehash now while we have it?
No, I actually want to promote your show for you because you're having Kaylin Cooper on tomorrow, and she is going to cover the Pacers as well as, and most likely, much better than I just did. So you all should listen to that.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for saying that. But to all my Heat listeners, make sure that you follow Tony and his incredible work over at Forbes. And of course, the Locked On Pacers podcast. He does a phenomenal job. So you'll always get some great content, even if their season winds up being cut a little shorter than he expected it. I'm sure he'll have some great offseason content as well. I'm David Ramil. You're Tony East. Thank you so much for listening.